Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are recording on Wednesday night, January the 15th, the Ides of January, about a few weeks here before the pitchers and catchers report to spring training, and about 2.5 months, no, about a month, 2 months from the season, maybe like 7 weeks from when the series kicks off overseas, the opening series of Major League Baseball. I'm Vlad Sedler. I'm joined today by my co-host, our first show in the new year, Jason Anthony at Boom 62. What's up, bud?
What up, Vlad? It's been far, far too long. Missed your face, missed your voice. Excited to jump into the new year potting. I have a calendar on my phone on the homepage, and it says 64 days until NFBC Vegas. So the countdown is officially on for me, and I'm sure a lot of other people. So really excited to talk some baseball tonight.
I am ecstatic to do it. We're going to cover a whole slew of things. There is a bunch of recent news that's popped up. It has been kind of slow in the first half of January, but I think the cookie's going to start crumbling. The dominoes will start toppling over, and it's going to get really, really fun here. Lucas Beery, our off-season tracker analyst, is about to be busy filling in that spreadsheet that's live on the site there on FTN. But how have you been doing with drafts? I know you've been dabbling, and you did like a RotoWire online championship slow draft. You're doing some DCs. How's draft season treating you?
You know, it always goes once that first draft hits, the dam breaks, and you really can't turn the drafting off. So I held off as long as I could, got into some of the early ones, first DC was done, and then I did my the first slow OC I've done, which I know you did too. It was quite different doing a slow online championship with the 12-team format with the Fab League, and then I've jumped in my second DC now. So really getting a good feel for the draft pool, really trying to project how the pitching is going to tighten up come big draft season in March, and kind of trying to really map out that draft strategy for when the big bucks are on the line.
We're gonna talk some news. Gonna touch on the topic of projections and what we have released here at FTN, and we're gonna discuss some undervalued hitters and just looking at projected playing time and how players that we feel might be overlooked based on the way they are being showcased, places like Roster Resource and in the news and things like that. So maybe some deals to be had. So we'll get through all that. But real quick, you know, I got to do it. It's some of the FTN housekeeping. As you know, the FTN draft guide has been out since mid-December. We have been producing a ton of content, but more is coming because it's going to start to come in more regularly. It's going to start to come up on a daily basis. As you know, on the tool side, the FTN VDP projections are live. They've been live for about a week now, and I'm now updating them. You know, internally, I'm updating them daily. So as news is dropping and or playing time assumptions or changes are made, I'm making that internally and then updating our file that can be downloaded and what you see on the website a couple of times a week. The Roto rankings, the top 500, that's updated. And we've also got the underdog rankings. For those that play underdog best ball, we have now added our projected points to those. So there are the projected points that underdog has on the site, and then we have ours. So it's a good comparison for you to see how VDP lines up to it. And it happens to be great timing with the Dinger contest, the $10 entry fee. You can enter under up to 150 times. Use promo code FTN if you haven't done it yet. And they're paying out a cool $1 million this year at underdog for this contest.
Yeah, I think before we got online, Vlad and I were talking about he was on the clock in the Dinger, and he had James Wood versus, I believe it was Michael Harris, and I guess you got to subscribe to see the VDP projections on for the Dinger to see who Vlad picked.
I also think it's probably, I mean, anyone that's probably listening to the show is following or a lot of subscribers, you kind of know how we stand here on Michael Harris the second this year. I mean, really just comes down to health. I'm just in general, I'm feeling a nice overall bounce back for this Atlanta offense. I got a little pumped up seeing a clip of Ronald Acuna Jr. hitting the ball out there. I mean, doesn't mean he's going to be ready opening day, of course, but it's just, you know, all these kind of things after the most awful season last year where they just dropped 20% in overall run production. They went from like a top, you know, two offense to, you know, just a little bit over a middling one. So I'm feeling some bounce back on the Atlanta side.
Yeah, from a team that was having breakout after breakout, just a good juju. Last year, it all caught up with him. So I'm definitely getting that vibe too. Acuna was falling all the way into the third round of some DCs I've seen. And, you know, as he did struggle last time coming off the ACL, and he's not going to be ready for opening day, but we might look back and regret letting him slide that far, because when he's on, man, I don't know if there's a more fun player, including Ohtani, to have on your team.
Absolutely. I just kind of brushed up a little bit on the fact that I really had no exposure to Acuna. I had, think, through 17 Gladiators and did my 18th yesterday. I'm through 17. I only had one Acuna. I thought I didn't have any, but I had one Acuna, and then I picked one up in my final one. I got him in the third round just to, you know, just to hedge a little bit. So we'll see how that goes. Just a little bit more on the content stuff. Just as far as this week is concerned, if you're into the dynasty and keeper stuff, Eric Cross, our resident expert in that realm, he just refreshed a wonderful article he does. It's free, no paywall on it. It's his dynasty primer. It's loaded with information, resources, sites. It's fantastic. Todd Whitestone is releasing the second of his three-part series where he breaks down building a draft roadmap. It's almost like a little bit of the pockets. See, last year we called it hot pockets, reminded us a little bit too much of, you know, pepperoni, but draft roadmap, a little bit more official. And then another cool thing is Dan Thompson. He is he's written for Pitcher List, a bunch of other places. He won an overall title in the NFBC a few years ago, the Memorial Day, the one that started a little later in the year. Red Fox Roto on the socials. He is a phenomenal writer. He wrote this piece. It's a two-part series. The first one's out, and he basically broke down the entire environment and sort of history of the stolen base. And he sets it up for the second part where he's basically going to discuss some of the targets he had. And one of the things he's focused on, and that we discussed him digging into, was, you know, the Jesse Winkers and Matt Chapmans out of nowhere who ended up having double digit steals. Like, what led to it and how we can find some of those guys this season.
Yeah, the FTN team keeps getting stronger, huh, Vlad? Great job bringing people in. Excited to read Dan's articles. Just another brilliant mind as part of the team. It's an honor to be part of this team. And really glad you changed the Hot Pocket title, because all I can feel is my mouth burning from taking a bite in one of those Hot Pockets and, you know, blistering. And I don't even remember tasting anything when I eat those. So it's a good name change.
Yeah, I mean, I walk by them in the frozen aisle when I go to Costco or the market, and I'm like, let me get some for old time steak. I still have yet to pull the trigger. A little bit more on what's coming up: Lucas Beery's Battleship series, which is basically looking at busts, potential busts per round. You're going to have more auction strategy content from Mike Mager. He's going to start running the ADP market report. He took over that column for me last season and is going to continue crushing it this year. My NFBC positional tier series will start. I'm going to work on getting the first one up next week. We've got a special guest writer that's going to focus on underdog strategy. And then I got one cool special announcement. It is the legend, the Lord himself, Todd Zola. He is going to be our next special guest analyst. I locked Todd up for this a few months ago, but it's basically, he is doing my version of late round profitable hitters, but for the starting pitchers, an article that Maddie Davis did for us a little bit over the years. So Zola is going to come in and do it. All of it, get in if you haven't yet, ftnfantasy.com, 10% off if you use the code VDP. That's what's active right now.
Nice. Excited to talk some recent news, Vlad. Let's jump into it. Your boy, hopefully not future Dodger, Roki Sasaki. I'm going to call him a future Blue Jay just to make myself feel better for the time being. But I have a gut feeling he's going to San Diego, but you know, maybe I'm just preparing myself for him to sign with the Dodgers. But It's going to be, I think, the big domino to fall. Once he signs, you're looking at Jack Flaherty. You're looking at any other pitchers out there. Then I think you're going to see a lot of trades start to happen once that all starts to settle. So I'm excited to see where he goes and just hoping it's not to the dirty Dodgers.
Yeah, anything's possible. And listen, if he signs with the Padres, I tip my hat. I try to be as, I guess, objective or like fantasy. I don't know how to put it in words. It's like, if he signs with the Padres, I'll be like, oh man, oh well, but it is what it is. We're always going to have pitching problems no matter how many great pitchers the Dodgers have. I'm going to probably have a 6-man rotation, if not right off the bat, eventually all those guys are going to have a little bit less on the innings front, whether Sasaki's a part of it or not, but most of those guys, especially if Sasaki joins them, like Yamamoto, Glasnow, I mean, these guys are all, like Snell, they're all staying healthy and they're producing between, 25, 29 starts and 140, 170 innings. And especially in, in fab leagues where you can, if you just know that, you're going to start most of those guys all the time, like most likely even like Blake Snell in Colorado for a single in a 15 teamer, you're probably going to start that, but probably going to get some really nice ratios from the Dodgers. I think last year was the first season in many years where they didn't have a massive advantage in ERA and WHIP over the other teams in baseball, not named the Houston Astros.
Yeah, that Dodgers rotation this year is going to be filthy. They're going to put up some incredible ratios. And, depending on the ADP, if you can squeeze enough innings out of the Blake Snells, the Yamamoto, I don't know Glasnow's health. Have you heard anything on his, if he's throwing?
Yeah, he's apparently fine and ready to go for camp and good to go. The question marks really there are more on what they're going to do. So if they don't, I do think Sasaki's landing there. That's kind of where I've been at for the last few weeks. And it's part of it is the fact that I just don't see him visiting and them getting the full court press from them. I couldn't imagine it being more impressive from the Padres than the Dodgers. And just the fact that you've got Ohtani and Yamamoto there. And then if Sasaki is to say, I'm a Padre, it's like the hugest finger you can give. It's like, screw you guys. I'm going to battle with you forever. And all this talk about that I hear about, endorsements are not enough money. Dude, I honestly do not think, and from everything I've read about him, he is not the kind of guy, $100 million versus $120 million. At a certain point, you don't care. The guy just wants to go out there and pitch in the best environment. He's making a huge life decision. He already did by the fact that he's coming here to the States. So listen, wherever he lands, San Diego is a better city than LA, to be honest. But baseball environment, I think Dodgers with Ohtani Yamamoto is the place to be.
Now, I did read this, and it might be completely false, but I read that Yu Darvish is his godfather.
Yeah, they're connected. That's a reason why a lot of people have huge kind of leans towards it being the Padres. The Padres themselves think they're going to land him. The Dodgers think they're going to land him. I don't think the Blue Jays think they are. I think that was more like, hey, you got to kind of throw a third team in there just for aesthetics. So it is really between those two. We'll see. Either team's going to be super stoked because I think he's legit, top three starting pitcher in baseball.
Well, if that is true and Darvish is actually his godfather, I think it's San Diego. As much as Ohtani and Yamamoto matter, when you have somebody that is that big of a presence in your life and a mentor that you get to pitch with, I think San Diego it is. And so, I'm hoping that team in LA that's dressed in blue is a little upset about it, but the Padres just get better, and so it's not good for my Giants. But at least they're not in the top three, and I don't have anything to get disappointed about. The Blue Jays can be just disappointed again. So,
and he's not like godfather in the official sense. It's more like he's been a mentor to him, over the years. That's kind of how I read it. It's like godfather in quotes, like a godfather type influence. I know Darvish also he's old, he's like getting close to 40. He also did pitch with the Dodgers. I don't know how he feels about them, but yeah, that's a very, very strong case there.
Yeah. I think it's a big, like it's dam's going to break of all these signings that are left in trade. So I'm excited to see it happen though.
Speaking of old guys, what about Justin Verlander signing with your Giants? You got to be at least a little happy about that, no?
You know, as a Giants fan, it doesn't move the needle for me. You know, will I turn it on every fifth day because he's pitching? Possibly. I listened to an interview after he signed, and it was interesting how he was talking about, you know, being 41 last year. He just tried to pick the ball up or put it down for 2 months and then pick it up as he was normal, and it caught up with him with his shoulder and then his neck, and it just he understands he can't do that. You know, for fantasy-wise, could it be usable at home? Absolutely. You know, that ballpark's really good. The defense is going to be good, much improved, I believe, this year. Is it someone that really is going to excite me as a Giants fan at 42 years old? Probably not. I think the Giants fans are going to be more excited to see Kate Upton in the stands than watching Verlander on the mound.
Oh, I forgot about that factor. That's right.
Yeah.
San Francisco just got an upgrade.
Are you into him at all?
I drafted my first one a few weeks ago before, I think it was before he signed, just because it was like some insane, somewhere like, you know, almost around 40 or something like that. His new ADP with the signing, and I don't think even those drafting them have much expectation for it, was 29, is like around 29, 30 right now. So it's like 425 to 450 overall. Charlie Morton is in that range now since he signed with the Orioles. I mean, we've talked about it on the show a lot. It's just the, as soon as somebody signs anywhere, they're all of a sudden on the radar and they get an immediate bump. And also the pitching pool in these draft champions is starting to consolidate. So if I'm looking at my drafts from November, the type of pitchers I was able to get around round 40 are basically not even available around like round 30, 32. So that landscape has really changed. I think that if he's actually healthy, and again, he's about to be 42, if he can stay healthy, I know he's talked about being fine with pitching at lower velocity. I think he's going to be a little bit more, you know, focused on the control and some other aspects of his game, but he feels good. So he says he feels healthy. And I wouldn't be surprised if he maybe had 23 starts with an ERA like a little under 4 and have some, like, you know, fantasy plus starts that we could use in DCs. The bummer of it all is the way that it impacts the rotation, because if everybody there is healthy, this glut of good prospects in a good pitcher's park. And I'm speaking specifically about like Carson Wisenhunt, supposed to be amazing at some point. Mason Black, Carson Seymour, Hayden Birdsong, who we saw a lot of last year, and then Landon Roop, a 26-year-old who I happen to be a big fan of. These guys are, you know, they're a little bit on the outside looking in unless you start to get some injuries going. And we know Logan Webb ain't going anywhere. You've got Robbie Ray. Now you've got Verlander, Harrison, Jordan Hicks. It's a full rotation. So it's kind of a bummer that we may not see as much of these guys as we'd like.
Yeah, I think the biggest initial fantasy impacts Hayden Birdsong. He showed elite strikeout stuff, and he showed to be pretty mature for his age pitching and that he was ready for the big leagues. You know, that being said, I don't believe he was going to pitch more than 130, 140 innings this year. So it's just a way to kind of temper his innings. I think, you know, just playing fantasy and knowing fantasy, the Giants are going to need those innings, especially with Jordan Hicks still getting stretched out. Harrison's a young arm. Robbie Ray still coming back off injury. We know Webb's going to take the ball every fifth day, but if you expect Verlander to go out and make 32 starts at 42 years old, that would be very impressive, but I don't think very likely. And as far as Verlander goes, I guess my biggest thing with fantasy, I am very ageist when it comes to pitching, less so with hitting. And, you know, it bites me sometimes, but I usually will always take the younger guy that hasn't done it rather than the older guy that has. I don't want to be a year too late. I'd rather be a year too early on being out.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You're right. I mean, Hayden Birdsong is, you know, he is a stud. As far as the, you know, on the strikeout side, I'm just trying to look at his what we have projected for on the walk rates. I can't remember all these guys, but I don't know. The one guy that stood out in our projections that, like, if he was to get, you know, on a rate stat basis, if he was to get like 20 starts, was Landon Roop, was the guy that stood out. Carson Wisenhunt, I think, is could be the most talented of them all. It just might be a little bit time. The way, you know, the manager there talked about like the order and who's in the rotation, it kind of seemed like he was, you know, on the outside looking in, unless just like phenomenal in camp and just because he's younger. But there's also the wild card of Jordan Hicks, right? Because he had that phenomenal start to the season and then just, you know, got hurt, fell apart, and just started getting whipped. And so, you know, he's another guy that I don't know. I don't know what expectations you have for him.
That was a pretty good pun there, Vlad. A good fantasy pun, getting whipped.
Yeah, he was getting hits and whips.
You know, I actually really like Hicks coming into this year at the price. I think you could get a really good 3 months, and knowing you're going to get 3 months out of him and drafting accordingly, you could get a lot of value out of where his ADP is. I think it's roughly close to 400 from what I believe from looking at it recently. He still is figuring out how to start, but he was really good for 2 months and then, you know, it caught up with him. So there is some, I think, opportunity at that end of that rotation. And, you know, as far as the young arms go, you're speaking of, I think this Verlander signing is a sign that the Giants do believe in these arms. It's just letting them mature. And they're really hoping they do pop, like, you know, the old Lincecum, Kane, Bumgarner trio, or, you know, the old A's, the Mulder, Zito, and Hudson. You know, you develop that big three from within, and it just does wonders for your team and your competition. So, and that's what they're trying to replicate.
Yeah, and you almost have an extension of a pitching coach there too in Justin Verlander, because that's a great resource to have there on the team.
Yeah, the mentorship, if teaches these guys how to pitch, even if it's just by osmosis, just by watching him prepare, watching him, you know, talk to Patrick Bailey, how he's going to attack hitters. You can't do anything but help, in my opinion. And, you know, one other thing you touched on, and, you know, I think it's important to talk about, people always say it's crazy to draft early. And I guess January is still considered awfully early, but you've already stated it. The deals that you got in November, December, they're gone. And the deals you're going to have in January, they're going to be gone. By the time you wait till middle into spring training to draft a fast DC, if you're going to do one, or your OC, that pool is going to be so tight because all the information is going to be out there and the group thing's going to be done, that you're not going to get any of these deals that, you know, you're going to be drafting guys 5, 10, 15 rounds ahead of where they're being drafted. So there is a lot of risk. I drafted early last year in my CLQ, and I had Matt McClain, and it really hurt. But you kind of take the risk, and I think I would always take the risk with the opportunity cost for doing those draft and hitting on the guys late.
100%. You know, and another thing that I was just thinking about was the one part of analysis that at least I haven't really got into, and this is major in football. It's the impact of coaches, offensive and defensive coordinators. And similarly in, you know, with pitching coaches, like we saw the impact that Andrew Bailey had on the staff last year and some other teams that really, you know, work well with their coach. It is worth noting that, you know, the new pitching coach for the Giants is JP Martinez. And no, it's not the bench guy from the Braves. This is a 42-year-old JP Martinez who's been their assistant pitching coach, working under both the Bob Melvin and Gabe Kapler regimes. He's been with them for several years, and, you know, basically since COVID, and before that he was 6 years with the Twins organization. So this is a guy that is very familiar with a lot of these pitches. And so, you know, I don't know if he's some you know, whisper or whatnot, but like, I think that's something I'm going to be starting to look into over the next 2 weeks, is like, who are the coaches, who's working with these guys, and who could be our next, like, Andrew Bailey pitching coach of the year.
You mean Andrew Bailey, former Giants pitching coach?
Yeah. There's the connection. Let's talk about Jeff Hoffman, signed with the Blue Jays today as we record on this Wednesday night. He admitted, Hoffman, that he did confirm the two failed physicals with the Braves and the Orioles. He did mention a little bit of a chip on his shoulder that he will have probably facing the Orioles this season. But listen, I mean, that's business, right? You see something you don't like and you make a decision. Of course, it's possible they were trying to sign him as a starter. We may not know those details, and Blue Jays felt comfortable going with this. The one part that was interesting is, at least from what Hoffman says, is he was surprised that there were any concerns about his shoulder on these reports, because he feels great and has no issues. So I don't know what doctors are seeing, but you know, that's from the Hoffman's mouth.
Yeah. And it just came out, the Braves had a 5-year deal with him that they backed out of. So when you have two teams back out, it gets a little concerning. You know, if I had to read the tea leaves and based off the two rotations and the bullpens, I would imagine Baltimore and Atlanta were trying to sign him as a starter, mm-hmm. and they didn't feel the shoulder was going to hold up. Toronto said they're going to use him as a closer. So, you know, pitching 2-3 times a week for one inning at a time, maybe the shoulder does hold up. Hoffman was somebody I was really attacking, you know, because his ADP was about 280 in early drafts. I really felt even if he was a starter or a closer, he was going to be valuable. He was valuable last year, and he only got, you know, 4 or 5 saves for the Phillies. He's just an elite arm. His new ADP is a little sticker shock. I was just doing a DC and he went pick 90, and I was not ready to put him in the queue yet. So I got to relook at that and feel how comfortable I am with that shoulder this year. It's been perfectly healthy the last 2 years, and just been really, really, really good out of the bullpen. So at ADP 90, he could be a huge boon, or he could be a huge bust. You know, it's a fascinating profile.
I have no idea what, like how to measure what my rankings or your tweets or anything has on the market, because everybody that plays NFBC, they're smart people. They make their own decisions, but also some things just are kind of, you know, the story speaks for itself. When we've all played for so many years, you kind of know where things are going. So when Hoffman signed, the very first thing I did was tweet that I'm probably moving him up into the McGill Ryan Walker range in the rankings. And then I did that, and I'm not saying like one before the other before one, it would have happened anyways, but it only really made sense that if he's healthy and he's closing for the Blue Jays and what he's done the last couple of years, the guy's elite. And if not for any small little health concerns, in a lot of ways, he's also more comfortable than like a Lucas Ursig. Even though I think Lucas Ursig is phenomenal, there's still always that outside chance. What if they sign someone? Or what if he, you know, is just a little worse and Hunter Harvey takes the job, right? There's concerns with all of these closers. But Hoffman in that range kind of makes sense. What's funny is when it came to a draft and I had to pick one of them, I couldn't pull the trigger at Hoffman there. And I think part of that is also, like you said, the sticker shock and the fact that we had been getting him in the 200s. It's tough to like mentally adjust to that. So I think I just defaulted to Trevor McGill, who to me is just like a horse 30% K guy.
Yeah, and you know what's funny, between the two of them, Trevor McGill has not been named closer. This is still an assumption by the fantasy community because he closed when Williams was out last year. But you know, you still have some arms there. Abner Uribe is still there. I think Piampas is still there. And so I believe McGill's closing, but Hoffman has been named the closer of the Blue Jays. So, you know, there is some value added to that, especially in the DC community.
That's funny that you say that, because some things we just take for granted. I hadn't even thought of it. Like it's funny. I'm like, not only am I convinced that it's him without even the manager saying it, I also think he's going to be like elite. You know, I also forget it's a little on the older side. But yeah, that was kind of the assumption from all of us that that's just what's going to happen. And it also has to do with, I think some of it is like his arsenal and his stuff. He's like kind of really fits that closer mold. He's like a huge dude too. And these other guys, there's, you know, like you mentioned, Joel Piamps is, you know, he's solid. He's closed before and, you know, dependable, but more like a setup guy. You mentioned Abner Uribe, who's like a 13-14% walk rate guy, but he's really got the filthiest stuff of the bunch, like, you know, him and McGill. And then there's Jared Connick, who's also pretty good, but they, you know, need some lefties in the pen. So yeah, that's good. I hadn't even thought from that angle.
Yeah. I mean, these managers, as much as we know what they should do, they don't always do it right. So it kind of bites us.
And you know, it's so funny because we know nothing, right? I mean, technically, no matter how much research study, we'll be right on a lot of stuff, wrong on some stuff, but like how, like baseball, you know, you can't predict baseball. Would it be if, Pete Fairbanks, Rays guy, doesn't get traded and then just like stays healthy and then ends up being like the closer one? These are the kind of things you just know, the random stuff that happens like that in baseball.
Well, and we still have, you know, four or five arms out there that are going to be closers or close to closers. I mean, what if Kenley Jansen signs a 1-year deal in Milwaukee for a Pelo contract? I think McGill is a monster, and so I'm on board with you, and I love the arm, but it's not set yet. And I've been drafting him as he's been set, as of you.
One last one, just so we can get, you know, to our hitters and some stuff, but I want to ask you about, so I've been into drafting some of these older guys that I was just really out on earlier in the season. And one of them is Paul Goldschmidt. And it's interesting because his price is increased since he's joined the Yankees, but also his stock has kind of increased. And if you click over to a projected Yankees lineup and you kind of look at it, I mean, you would just, whether you like him or hate him, if you're a fantasy player, you just start salivating. Like, this team, this offense is in freaking sane. And then if you really do add Goldie in there, I don't care that he's 37. Like, if he's healthy, he's just going to be getting, you know, knocking batters in his sleep. Like, those counting cats go up. Like, maybe he's just like more pumped up being part of like that big stage. He's never been a part of something like that. He's been in Milwaukee, Arizona, St. Louis. Like, this is big time. Goldie could be, he was that, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, he was, after a horrible season, he was literally the number two fantasy hitter in baseball behind Judge.
Yeah, he's not far off from fantasy greatness. You know, there is that cliff for the bat speed, the decision-making, this velocity era we're in. You know, you look at Goldie, and, you know, one of the things he's excelled at is hitting it the opposite way, and that short porch in right field in New York is awfully juicy. That lineup's juicy. You know, as much of an aegis as I am in pitching, I am aegis in hitting too, but that's bit me. So I'm really trying to look at it objectively and see what he's going to produce and the people around him. And I don't have any Goldschmidt yet, but I'm not opposed to it. So, and you get the 6 to 10 bags too. The stolen bases that he chips in from first base do matter.
Yep. And I think I had noticed when I was working on the Yankees projection that they have really only stolen over 125 bases as a team once in like the last six, seven years. And I think we have as a team total, if I recall correctly, closer to like 140. And there are some base stealers on this team now. You got Jason Dominguez, you got Jazz Chisholm, may not steal 40 again. I think that might be a little bit, I think he might give up a little bit on the stolen bases and maybe hit some more homers if he stays healthy. You got Bellinger there. This offense is insane. I mean, if there's a team that can score 900 runs, that this one might be it.
You forgot about the Italian stallion.
Rizzo?
Volpe.
I'm kidding.
The other come hand. On. Don't you slander Anthony Volpe.
Listen, I'm drafting Volpe. I got no problem with it. All right. Real quick, if you guys are not in on it, the VDP projections over at FTN, this is something that I've been working on, this model. It's basically like a I've been putting in anywhere from 5 to 12 hours a day in my sleep whenever I can, creating this basically environment of the entire league. And the projections did really well on the aggregate, like as a whole in comparison to the other systems. And this, a lot of the things I've learned from the last couple of years of doing them, I've kind of improved and put a little bit more time into it. And so just a really quick summary of the process, we're not going to get into the details, but it is a scaled full season simulation. And it's something that I adjust every day. So if there is a shift in assumption for the, you know, playing time, you know, for example, what happened, Braxton Garrett out for the year in Miami, there is an environment of approximately 1420 to 1440 innings for the Miami Marlins. And so it's me allocating within that group. And the one thing I'm not doing is I'm not projecting the guys that have that, you know, I'm not going to project who's going to have like make one start or five innings or whatever. I've got the 16 or 17 guys that are going to get the bulk of, you know, 40 plus innings. And so it's allocating amongst the starting pitchers and then within the relievers and then making everything flow within the stats. So it's like a full season environment based on 162 games where every team has about 1,400 or so innings pitched, and every offense has about 6,100 plate appearances. So Braxton Garrett's out. Okay, you move in a little bit of Max Meyer. He's got the Ryan Weathers news that came out about him losing 30 pounds and really, you know, getting his stuff together, adjustments to be made. So it's market agnostic. The dollar values, the auction values that come out from this are, there's no influx or relation to ADP. There's no bumping up for catchers or anything. It's like a real life projection. And then I'm not including free agents. So like once Jesse Winker signs somewhere, then I will adjust. You know, he goes to the Pirates, we adjust the Pirates outfielders and the overall environment there. So that's the whole sort of process for it. The only thing I'm adjusting for is my playing time assumptions. And then if there's really notable news on the skills side, on the rate side, like, you know, pitcher X has now added a splinker and he's throwing 2 miles per hour higher or whatever, is like fully healthy, a guy that we thought was only going to make 25 starts. Now maybe we could project him for 28. So it's a constantly moving thing. It's a beast. It's a pain in the ass, but man, I love it. And I'll do it every year till I'm blue in the face.
You want to talk about a labor of love. It is such a good model too. And the amount of work you put in it, it's been really accurate the last couple of years too. So I'm really looking forward to diving into it and using it as a great tool this year, hopefully make me some money.
Well, the last thing, well, first of all, the other thing is, and Jason's being modest, he builds his own models and, you know, obviously crushes it on the fan, you know, on the high stakes thing. But the more inputs, the more that we're researching, spending time learning and picking up, and not just like, you know, I'm not saying, oh, you know, trust, put all your trust in these projections or, you know, everything we're doing. There'll be a lot of things that are wrong. What I can say is the time that we are putting in on this and the experience and research does have some value, and that all kind of adds up to this formula. The last thing I'll mention about it is it's the model, it's symmetrical. So if, you know, you download the file and you kind of notice like the total strikeouts and walks and whatever it is almost equivalent, the hitter's environment and the pitcher's environment. There has to be the balance. Otherwise the projections don't really, you know, they're just kind of like, you know, up in the air, you know, lick your lips and whatever. And the last thing is all of it leads up to this custom rankings tool that will be out. Our developers are working on it. This is going to have our projections loaded into whatever your league scoring system is. You're playing some crazy, you know, like I spent 3 days projecting holds. Okay. And my brain freaking hurts, but you want holds for your leagues. We got those. I'm going to continue to adjust those as well. You play Yahoo Points, CBS, ESPN. We got it. So all that is coming out soon. So that's enough of my spiel. I just had to get it out there because I need it. I need everybody to know.
As well, you should shout from the mountaintops, Vlad. Keep it going.
All right. Undervalued hitters. The thing here is, you know, I talk about Jason R. Martinez a lot because I think the guy is just a savant and his work ethic is on an insane level. And he's the guy that created Roster Resource. He runs the FanGraphs depth charts, playing time, projections, and he's awesome. The one thing that I'll mention, and he knows it himself, is there's a heavy reliance from early drafters on his playing time assumptions. And if he's got, you know, a starting pitch, you know, as soon as Verlander comes into the San Francisco projected rotation and Birdsong comes out, you will see Birdsong drop down ADP, or, you know, some change among the hitters and some guys now in his, you know, projected minors, that guy will fall, and so on and so forth. So, you know, he's amazing. Dan Sombrowski, if I pronounce his name correctly, you know, all these people that are doing playing time is phenomenal. At the end of the day, none of us can really predict the future. Like tomorrow, you know, Marcus Semien's out for the year or something, like the guy who plays more than anyone. But like not even managers know what's happening until, you know, camp starts, they're starting to get an idea. So then I bring this question to you, Jason, like, you know, based on your research so far and you knowing how people adapt to Roster Resource and other places, have you like kind of gone down the avenue of like, oh, I don't agree here. Here's an opportunity for me to kind of, you know, get ahead of the market on players.
Yeah. You know, every year I'm trying to tweak my process to become the most effective. And for the last couple of years, I have ran my own projections, and I think it's kind of for me personally, is more of a futile exercise. These projections are pretty good, if not really good. I think where the biggest opportunity isn't the projections per at bat, it's playing time. And I think that's what you're referring to here, Vlad, is the opportunities yep. of playing time. Because me thinking a guy's going to hit 30 homers when, you know, Steamer, the bat, you know, VDP all thinks you have 20, you know, why would I be smarter than these models? I think that's fool's gold. Now, if I think that player A is going to have 100 more at bats to get to that number, that makes sense. But as far as the skills, that's where I kind of got caught pie in the sky looking at numbers incorrectly. When, you know, Steamer, we'll just use Steamer. I think that's kind of the catch-all for most people. Already has it baked in. They have all of these data we're looking at. They have it baked into the projections. Now, it's a 50th percentile projection rather than an 80th percentile, which we all shoot for. But I'm really this year focused on playing time. One thing I've really done into my profiles is the platoon splits, which I haven't in the past. And it's really, I think, opened up my eyes to a lot mm-hmm. of playing time avenues or concerns. Couple guys that stood out to me, and I'll just jump to outfield. You know, we can name a bunch of guys, but Michael Conforto on the Dodgers. I was shocked to see, you know, being a Giants fan, watching him last year, he didn't play against a lot of lefties, but his numbers are actually decent against left-handed pitching. The Dodgers aren't going to platoon him as much as I think people think. I mean, he actually was better against left-handed pitching than against right-handed pitching last year. He had a 145 WRC plus against left-handers. Is that going to continue? I don't know, but they paid him a lot of money, and I don't see him just facing right-handed pitching. And at his ADP, I think there's a lot of value there. Another guy is Jake McCarthy on Arizona. He got a lot of playing time last year and showed that he can handle left-handed pitching. In the past, he's been strictly a platoon. Great defense. Is Alec Thomas going to platoon with him? I don't know. But if he plays every day or, you know, 145, 150 games, you could be looking at 35, 40 steals. And then the last one is Max Kepler. Manager just came out, said they can't platoon everybody. So between him and Brandon Marsh, it's pretty simple to me that Brandon Marsh is going to be platooned, and Kepler, whose splits are not terrible at all, is going to be playing more than Marsh is.
Yeah. So what you just said is incredibly eye-opening. And this is how you gain the edge over competitive fantasy players, and especially in the NFBC market, who are all sitting there with the same information. Everyone's got the FTN subscription, the Baseball HQ, the RotoWire, the, you know, the Patreons and all that stuff. You're getting a lot of inputs. And then how do you differentiate? How do you become, you know, a Lindy, Phil, Posma, Casey Chaw? There's just some natural talent. I'll just mention this. He probably doesn't like that I'll even mention that he's, you know, back and around, but I am in awe always of Casey Chaw. And he didn't play last year in the NFBC, first time in years. He's a Hall of Famer. Popped back in this season and, you know, was in a draft next to him. I've now ended up in the last three drafts, and we're basically drafting next to each other all the time. I'm in awe of his game. Like, you know, like, I don't even know if he watched baseball the past year or whatever. Like, he just knows. He just has that feel, just that, he just kind of that intuition. And so my whole point of what I'm saying is you have to find those extra edges, and you just named a huge one. It's finding those guys that have the red L in them in roster resource, or the R, blue R, and figuring out who you think really will platoon or not, like basically figuring out that playing time. And you're right on, like, on Conforto, a guy who I remember many years ago when he was a Met, it was like, oh, you know, you can't play him against lefties. I'm looking, even with those like poor years against lefties earlier in his career, he's still, like, you know, like you said, a 96 career WRC plus against lefties. You know, 128 against righties, of course. Even his ISO, isolated power against lefties, over his career is decent, 160. And as you mentioned, he was better against lefties last year. Sure, he'll sit against some, but the Dodgers are probably going to have him in the lineup a lot. So that's a really good one. So, like, finding those little edges, specifically with the playing time and with the platoon splits, is a massive, massive advantage to differentiate from the field.
Yeah, and it's the fun part of the research. You know, I remember talking to Casey the last year he played before he backed out, and he was just he's a poker player. He told me he's always trying to find the edge. And I think the year he did really well that I talked to him, it was the NL Central. This was the year after COVID, I believe, and the data was all messed up, and he just attacked a bad division and he paid off. So it's all just finding all the hitting. Yeah. It's just finding the edges. And, you know, like Vlad said, we have the same data. Nobody has a different report, you know, that somebody else is looking at than everybody's looking at. Now, Phil might, because he has his own formula, how it spits out his players, which is interesting. But the data we're all he is. The data we're all consuming is all the same. It's just how do we digest it? How do we use it? And there's valuable opportunities there that I need to get better of taking advantage of to compete with the Phils and to really take that next step in my fantasy game.
Well, specifically on a few guys that some are getting attention in the NFBC ADP market and drafts, and some are not. But some of these left-handed potential big power bats or left-handed hitters who are mainly going to be, you know, on the strong side of the platoon, some of them in the middle of their lineup, but wanted to throw a few names out, and they're in different ADP ranges, but let me know what you think. You got Kerry Carpenter, who hit a crap ton of bombs last season in the middle of the lineup and hit for grid average, which was, you know, a little bit BABIP infused, but you know, he is most likely going to be in the middle of that lineup. I've been seeing him slip a lot in drafts lately, and there's been some discussion there. Josh Lau hasn't even been talked about, and we know what Tampa does. They always platoon guys, but he's going around 160, 180. Matt Wallner, a guy that a lot of us have talked about, hasn't really seen much of a boost. I mean, we know what he is. He's going to be one of the highest he's going to be one of the highest strikeout rates in baseball, like for sure, unless something massively has changed in his game. And if he doesn't platoon, even if he does or doesn't platoon a lot, he's going to hit his like home run rate, like per at bat is, you know, 97th percentile. He's like got some of the best power Statcast numbers you can imagine. So you got Wallner's a beast. Another couple of guys later down the line, like after round 20, would be like Kyle Manzardo and Jock Peterson. And then you had mentioned Max Kepler. So let's talk about these guys here for a few.
Yeah. Before we do jump in, I have a bar question bet that, you know, I want to ask you that you might be able to hold on to next time you're at a bar that you can win a free drink. What is the lowest WRC plus that you've heard of?
I don't know, like a -5 or something.
Evan Carter last year on the Rangers. Now, mind you, this was a smaller sample size, was a -34 WRC plus against left-handed pitching. I looked three times. I thought that was a misprint. So, you know, platoon splits, he's not going to face many lefties. And, you know, there's something too, like we'll just use Josh Lowe, who I really do like, and I know he was made you a lot of money a couple of years ago, Vlad. It's not always a bad thing when these guys platoon, when they're not good against, if they're left-handed, not good against left-handed pitching. Now, if they're right-handed and they get platooned, that's a problem, because you know, more pitchers are right-handed, but sometimes you want to put your guy in a position to succeed. Kerry Carpenter, I thought I'd be really in on him after the finish to the year, and I thought he'd be on a lot of my teams, but he had an 18 WRC plus against left-handed pitching. That 100 WRC plus is average. 18 is well below replacement value. Now, against right-handed pitching, his WRC plus is 176. So he was a top 30 hitter against that. So he can mash. But if you think he's going to have a breakout playing every day, you're in for a rude awakening. You know, out of that group we talked about, Josh Lowe is probably my favorite because the speed aspect. And then Tampa normally has all these different options in the outfield. They're really thin this year, and he might have to play a little more than he used to.
Yeah, and Tampa may not be done, but either way, I mean, it doesn't affect Josh Lowe's playing time. He's still young. He was hurt last year. He's playing hurt. He still stole 30 bags, and this is like platooning. The season prior, he, you know, hit 20 plus bombs with ease. I, you know, his power went down a little bit, so you'll probably have projection systems having him under 20. I think even we're a touch under 20 on the homers. He kind of feels like a little underrated, and yeah, it is hard pulling the trigger in the 10th, 11th round on a guy that you know you're going to have to bench sometimes. Like, there will be a period in the NFBC where it's like a 4-game week and, you know, two lefties, and it's a tough call versus someone you have on the bench. Of course, he will hit, you know, 3 home runs in that series when you bench him against the lefty. That's how it works. But the one thing I will kind of push back on that you mentioned is, so like, you know, the Kerry Carpenter, and you mentioned that there's smaller sample sizes. I will say, you know, it is sometimes harder to find like splits on minor leaguers. I know there are obviously there are ways, but like, I would want to dig in and see how Evan Carter, you know, I know the narrative is, you know, he can't hit lefties, whatever I want, but I want to see it for myself. With Kerry Carpenter, you know, last year he was also hurt, you know, hamstring, some other injuries. And so like, it was a really small sample that like, you know, those bad numbers was like, were like in like 30 plate appearances or something. In the prior season, it was a little better. He's obviously much better against righties, but he had like, you know, almost 80 plate appearances against lefties the previous year. And his WRC plus was like 90, you know, so like a little bit more respectable. But so who is he? He's probably somewhere in between that, you know, the 19 and the 90. But then it's about the construction of that team. Like, you know, they're probably, like you said, not going to play him against lefties if they have a lot of depth.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is very team dependent. You have Kyle Manzardo on here. He's another really interesting name. He struggled against lefties last year. I think his WRC plus was 60. And his manager self-proclaims he plays the hot hand. And so if Manzardo isn't playing against a lot of lefties and then his backup is looking good, he might sit against some righties. As much as I like the talent and the bat, he is a major concern for me where he's going, being UT only as well. I do believe he's going to get first base eligibility, but these guys, there is value opportunities there, even though they have platoons. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. One guy that's really interesting to me is Luis Garcia Jr. on Washington. His draft cost is high, a top 100 pick. And I had him on a couple teams last year, and I had him on one of my really good OCs. I think it was top 30 at the time last year. And he was sitting against a decent amount of left-handed pitching, and it was driving me nuts because every time he was on the field, he was producing. He ended up having a 78 WRC plus against left-handed pitching. But as he continues to break out and is kind of seems like a building block of that team, I'm wondering how they're going to use him, because I can't spend a top 100 pick on a guy that's not going to play, you know, every day. I need a guy in a top 10 round, a top 100 pick that's going to be on the field getting 150 games when healthy.
Yeah, so that's a good one. So this is a perfect example where, listen, we had all the time in the world and this was like could be all we did, and obviously, you know, we have day jobs. Most everyone else that's listening is not in baseball full time. But like, this is where you go down the puzzle, and this is something I have to do in order to make the projections as accurate as possible. But like, okay, let me see here. Luis Garcia, oh, they just signed Amed Rosario. What does Amed Rosario do? He is a right-handed platoon bat on the short side. Oh, Amed Rosario plays second base. And then it's like, then you start questioning, like, will he sub in for him against righties at second? Will he be used like the Rays used him, where he could play a little third for Jose Tania, you know, maybe until Brady House is up? It's like, you know, that's kind of the beauty of this. Like, you know, we start asking questions, it just leads to more questions and like more digging and more rabbit holes. And then at least we get like some level of understanding or comfort.
And then they sign somebody else and all that work we just did is gone. You got to start over and then you're more confused. So it is fascinating. Like Jock Peterson in Texas, or he's going to be playing against righties. We know that, but he can hit lefties. He really can, but that lineup is so deep. I don't see him playing against lefties. So, is there value there? Yeah. But how much? I don't know.
Yeah. And that brings in something interesting up, how, you know, these guys change from year to year and how we need to be kind of careful looking at 1 year samples. Like, I was looking at the fact that the Rangers signed, you know, Kyle Higashioka, and kind of having him in a platoon with Jonah Heim. It makes sense because so last year you know, 2 years ago, Jonah Heim broke out and had a great season in 2023. And then last year he was, he played 130 games, but then you started seeing him get platooned for, and he was a lot worse against righty. So he almost started looking like a short side platoon guy. And so the Higashioka Heim, you know, platoon kind of made sense. But now I'm thinking, what if Higashioka, just to get his like big bopping bat in the lineup, they could platoon him with Jock. He could technically DH. So maybe do we bump his value a little bit? It's those like little things. Like if you want a catcher too, you can afford the batting average ding. Hey, Higgy might hit 20 homers.
Yeah. And if he can get 60% of the at-bats, you know, 50-50 split with some DH at-bats, all of a sudden he's very usable as a catcher too. It's, again, like Vlad was saying, it's that puzzle. You know, there's some really important point to put to this too. When you're looking at the hitting splits, a guy could be terrible against left-handed pitching, but it's, if he is elite in the outfield or elite at his position, he's going to play. So Dalton Varsho is a good example. When he's healthy, he's going to play no matter how bad he is against lefties, because he's a gold glove center fielder. So you can't just say this guy's going to platoon because he's bad, his WRC plus or his stats look bad against left-handed pitching. So you also have to look at the defensive metrics as part of this puzzle. And, you know, the other factor is the more these guys play against left-handed pitching, the better they get. You know, it's when they don't get opportunities to break out, you know, they're just never get the chance that they never learn to hit it. A lot of these guys are good enough to get over that hump. It's just the teams won't let them. But if they're defensively skilled enough, then they will get that opportunity. And then that's when the breakouts really occur, because they're on the field every day.
Yeah, absolutely astute observation, because that's something that I know has been lacking in my game for the last several years. At first 20 years playing fantasy, couldn't care less. Like, defense, what do I care about defense? It matters, because it does impact and affect the playing time. So now I'm looking at defensive stats and, you know, catcher framing metrics, learning about things, how, you know, why is Camp Pisano not playing as much as Higgy in San Diego last year? Oh, because Higgy's just playing better defense. He's been a better catcher, and that's what it is. It could change next year, but that's just such a big part of it. It's a concern. This is maybe shouldn't really matter, but like in St. Louis, Ivan Herrera is just like absolutely one of my favorite targets, catcher targets. And you start to look at his defense a little bit and you start to wonder, because Pedro Paez, the guy that he's supposed to, you know, the tandem with there, is better defensively. Will he kind of, you know, sneak in and get some, you know, some more work there? Because we know Wilson Contreras is now playing catcher. So then do I pump the brakes a little bit on a rare, what is, I feel like, a diamond in the rough, a catcher after 200 who can hit 15 home runs with 50 RBI and maybe a 275 plus average?
Don't forget Herrera runs a little bit too. So that's, I think, another of the allure of that. Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing is team context. Who do they have behind them? Is there anybody that's worth platooning? A great example is Alec Burleson on St. Louis. His WRC plus against left-handed pitching last year was 43, which is terrible, but he played every day the second half. They were not platooning him, so they let him kind of eat it. He was somebody when I initially dug in, I really liked, but then I saw that and it put a big yellow caution flag on it. So I got to figure out where he is and what's going on in St. Louis, because they're tearing that team down. And if they do let him play, he could, you know, like I said, get over that hump and all of a sudden be an 85 WRC plus and be close to league average, and then really mash his right-handed pitching.
It's weird. I've been getting a lot of like late round Cardinals, like the Lars Nootbaars, Jordan Walkers, Victor Scott's away late, even some Michael Ciani in DCs. I've been kind of doing it. I don't know why. It almost doesn't make sense, but I'm just, you know, going where my research is taking me. But there are a few things I like about this this offense. I don't think, you know, Arenado's not even going to be there very soon. He's going to be somewhere else, and so these guys are going to get an opportunity to play. There are going to be some playing time battles, you know, Victor Scott versus Ciani. I think Nolan Gorman will probably play a lot of third base when Arenado is gone. It's going to be like 30 home runs with like a 202 average, which is kind of what he does. But, you know, the manager there said he's going to play, get his 600 at bat. So there's some interesting stuff here. You know, there's a guy who's kind of overlooked, and it's our boy Donnie Dingers. Brendan Donovan is just like really good at real life baseball, making contact and all that stuff. Not necessarily fantasy translatable, but man, he's, you know, 600 plus at plate appearances of, you know, like 285 is really good for the fantasy lineup.
Yeah, he's not going to blow you away with any of his fantasy production, but he is that guy that you just want on your team that you can plug in the second or outfield. Huge asset, that good batting average, decent power, minor speed. Steamer has him for 13 homers, 71 runs, 66 RBI, 7 stolen bases, and a 278 average. It's a really strong value on your team when you could put him second, middle, outfield, and kind of move him around. I know I had him a lot last year, and he was valuable. You know, he's more valuable to me in a 15-team format than a 12, but each team has a team construction where you can find the value out of it.
There's a guy that has one of the biggest variances I've seen in draft champions and in the 50-round DCs, and that's Jackson Holliday. So this is a guy that has a first-round pick, Matt Holliday's kid, a 232 ADP. But in the last 30 days of drafts, this is about a dozen of them, this is the biggest variance I've seen. It's 170 min and a 320 max. So that's like between rounds 11 and 22. And I can understand being timid in a gladiator where a lot of it just seems to me like the mass assumption is that, like, I don't know, people seem very bullish on him, but it's a very like Josh Lowe type situation from two seasons ago. I mean, you know, everyone kind of thinks already they know what Jackson's Holliday is going to do. I don't think anyone does. I mean, this is like legit skill set in an amazing lineup. Why can't he blow up? Why couldn't this be a good deal?
Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, the Miyagi method of fantasy baseball. Oh, the post-hype sleeper, nobody's going to be on him, so I have to be on him. The kid can't drink yet. He's not 21. I don't know if he's ready to really produce at the big league level. So he's not really, this year it's going to be, if he breaks out, it's not going to be on my team. Actually, he's going to be turned 21 shortly if he's not. So have a drink for me, Jackson, if you're listening. But it's hard to come up and work for 6 months and travel and produce in the big leagues physically and mentally. And we saw it last year. He came up and everybody was excited. I mean, he hit 189 last year. And I just don't see the speed there that you get with a lot of young kids coming up that, you know, okay, if he doesn't hit, at least he'll run. I don't see the power, don't see the batting average. As good as he's going to be, which we all can agree he will, I don't understand, you know, even the 300 ADP. Give me a lot of other guys around that.
That's a stand, and that's fair. And it'll either, the three things, right? It's either going to really hit it, you're going to be really wrong, you're going to be really right, or most likely it'll just be like, you know, somewhere in the middle, which makes the most sense.
Yeah.
What about the Rock? This is not maybe as exciting, but outside of Brenton Doyle, who's pretty much locked in center field, you've got, you know, roster resource. They show, this is interesting, it's Nolan Jones and Jordan Beck in a platoon in left, and then Sam Hilliard in right. I know Hilliard's going to get some more opportunities. I don't think anyone foresees like a full season of Hilliard. If so, I'll be like, you know, dancing everywhere because I've loved the guy for years and he finally makes it happen. And then, you know, Hunter Goodman can play some outfield. You got Sean Bouchard, a couple of kids in camp, Yankel Hernandez, Zach Veen. Veen's kind of been one of those prospects that hasn't hit yet for years. They just signed Nick Martini on a minor league deal. They got a guy named Greg Jones there, former Tampa prospect. So, I don't know, any sense or any interest here in this outfield, any of the players? And then let me ask you for your Brenton Doyle opinion on repeat or bust.
You know, Nolan Jones is at a cost now. It could work. I'm personally staying away. I might take some shots later in a DC where it could pay off, or at the end of the draft in a fab league. But I'm not putting any capital into the situation with how Colorado has shown to manage their players. It is just a dumpster fire. I mean, as good as Nolan Jones was for those two months, they did not seem to like him very much, and he was hurt constantly. So we don't know what he is. The value's there if it hits. I just think I'm looking for a little more security in that situation.
And what about Brenton Doyle, just as a potential repeat? Have you dug much into him?
I have, and I would call that a legit breakout. I don't believe it was fluky. I have it up right here. Dropped his K rate 10% to 25% last year. When you see that kind of improvement, and you're putting the ball in play in Coors, that is a huge deal, because that ballpark is just BABIP heaven. Increased his line drive rate, lowered his chase percentage, increased his contact percentage all the way up to 73%. I don't know what kind of power you're going to get, but I think you're pretty safe to get 20-20, and I think there's a 25-35 season in there. Elite defense, and that goes back to he'll play through struggles. The thing I struggle with at that ADP is the batting average. It's really hard for me to take guys with poor batting average in the top 5-6 rounds. There's no way to get away from taking bad batting average late in the draft. So if you take it early, it's a real challenge to keep that up. But I do believe Brenton Doyle is for real.
Yeah, he's a fair price. I think where he goes, somebody needs some steals. I think 30, you get a full season. He's locked in. He's going to be their leadoff man. He's proved that that's what he is, who he's going to be, and the role he's going to play. So leading off him, Tovar, and the rest of the guys, but you might even see him flirt with 40. I wouldn't be surprised. It's not something we're projecting, but that can happen. And the power isn't massive, but it's there. The Rockies schedule is really weird. I mean, of course, we all know how things usually start off kind of slow there. A lot of the games early in the year are on the road. But from a fantasy perspective, I couldn't pull up my old tweet from a few weeks ago. But when I dug into the Rockies schedule, like it's very unfriendly for fantasy. So there are a lot of full weeks where like the majority of they have less all home weeks than before, than in previous seasons. It almost doesn't really matter in NFBC because you got the split weeks and all that, but streaming wise, it's a little harder and you almost have to wait for it for a while. Like the value of a home stream of, Jordan Beck against, whatever is not coming for so many months. It's hard to be patient for that.
Well, and historically Colorado does not a good hitting park for the first couple months because it's still really cold. So it's not the worst thing in the world to save those home games towards middle of the year. And somebody like Brenton Doyle is kind of, I think he's park proof. He'll produce on the road. Obviously you want him in Colorado. That's why you're drafting him. But I do think he'll produce on the road. And I was just looking, man, he had a big second half. So he really kind of continued that breakout that he started in the first half. And I mean, he had an 843 OPS and without any kind of fluky numbers behind it, barrel rate of 13% in the second half. And that's impressive numbers as far as for a Colorado hitter. So, he could put up an even bigger season and it could be a huge payoff. So it's somebody I got to dig into a little deeper now.
Any other guys that you want to talk about for this area? So maybe perhaps some we miss that you are a fan of, you feel is underpriced or maybe even overpriced.
Only guy I'll bring up is a guy I can never quit. And I was shocked. His WRC plus against left-handed pitching was zero. That's a hard number to do. It's my boy MJ Melendez on the Kansas City Royals. He plays, and I think he'll continue to play, but he just continues to not be what we thought he was. He still hits the ball hard, but it might be the year I get off of him. But I just thought that number was entertaining, to say the least.
Remember when he used to be catcher eligible? Those were good old days.
That's where I got in on him.
I don't think anyone even knows or has even bothered to look it up other than his mom obviously knows. But Mervell Samuel Melendez Jr. is his first name. That's his full name. Something I hadn't even thought about to look up until now.
Well, dropping more knowledge. That's what we do here.
Last, the Red Sox, the there a little discussion. It's not necessarily all that intriguing for fantasy, especially if you're listening to this and wanting to just get a feel for the first couple hundred picks. But the second base job is already in discussion there, with the Red Sox wanting to give Vaughn Grissom a chance to win it. They are considering, you know, letting David Hamilton play, you know, all over the field, play a little outfield. The guy already has a bunch of positions he's eligible at. But it might be like a battle between Vaughn Grissom and Christian Campbell, who's a very highly touted rookie for the Red Sox. He's getting a lot of draft action. So, you know, just a little something to mention. They talked about Masataka Yoshida playing some outfield. There's also a chance he could be traded. There's a lot going on in Boston. The one thing I'll mention is, have you seen how many reclamation projects this team has? Like,
yeah,
it's insane.
Well, they have Giolito coming back. They got Liam Hendricks coming back. It's going to be interesting how this team does this year with the pitching. You know, does Crochet stay healthy? That offense could be a lot of fun. It's kind of a big unknown. So it will be pretty fascinating. I do think Masataka Yoshida is huge value where he's going right now. The guy can hit. He doesn't have a ton of power, but he is an incredibly good hitter. And whether it's on Boston, or I still think there's a good chance he gets traded, and whoever does trade for him with the salary he has will probably want to play him. So again, another UT only guy, and that does sap the value even more, but I do think there's value there. And I think the Grissom Campbell battle will come down to if Campbell's willing to sign a long-term deal before camp. If not, mm-hmm. I can see them playing some contract games with him and starting Grissom until Campbell's ready. But he's supposed to be an elite prospect.
Yeah, very, very solid. You mentioned a couple of the reclamation projects with Liam Hendricks and who else did you say?
Lucas Giolito's coming back this year.
Giolito. Yeah. Walker Buehler, Aroldis Chapman, Trevor Story technically is one as well. Justin Wilson, if you really want to get deep, he's a 37-year-old lefty reliever in their pen. And then Michael Fulmer, remember him? I got hit hard a couple years ago thinking he was going to be the Cubs closer, just destroyed.
Closer him. That never was.
Yeah. So this team, yeah, they got a lot going on. I mean, Garrett Whitlock will be coming back. They even signed Patrick Sandoval to a big
reclamation. Contract.
Exactly. Crazy team, and they got stuff going on with, you know, with Tristan Casas and Rafael Devers. They're, you know, concerned about both of his shoulders. It's a lot. And
two of the top five prospects in the game coming up.
Roman Anthony. Yeah. Like, I was on a pod the other night as a guest, and, you know, Uncle Ted pops in as he always does. I'm sure he listened to it, but it's just the funniest thing. Like, he started posting in the YouTube chat. He's like, you know, don't leave your drafts without Roman Anthony. It was really funny. Just thought I'd mention that.
A man of many good opinions, or strong opinions. Most of them are good. Some of them are fun.
And the Red Sox, by the way, they acquired, they acquired your boy, Blake Sable, FYI.
Yeah. Former boy, the Giants got a whopping, $50,000 in international signing bonus, I believe, for him. Where I don't know if it wasn't much, but he was DFA'd. So guy can hit. He just doesn't have a position. So, hope he does well. He had an incredible walk-off homer against Ryan Helsley. I won't forget as a Giants fan. That was a lot of fun, but not going to miss him too much.
That's a good way to end the show with a little Blake Sable reference. First of all, he has to make the team, and then I don't know. I think the Reese McGuire ship has sailed. Yeah, we're losing it at this point. Let's call it quits. Let's call it while we're ahead here. Anything else that you wanted to touch on, or should we call it a show?
No. Love catching up, love talking ball, and excited to get into the position previews coming up. I know that's coming up rapidly, so it's great to be back on with you.
You too, my friend. 2 months to go here, and Vegas, as you said, 62 days?
64, I believe. Let me pull it back up. Yep, still 64.
Excellent. We got the minute-to-minute breakdown there. So for Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.